Amen. Thank you. If you will, roll it back two slides to the last slide that was right there. Reason why is and you might be saying, where in the world is he going with this? Exactly, no. That's kind of the question also, where is this going? If you notice in music a lot of times, let's just try something. Why did y'all do that? Did I ask y'all to do that? You're like, no, and I know I'm getting in trouble here. But, okay, so whenever you hear that, you knew what was supposed to come. And, in fact, if y'all hadn't done it, some of y'all would have been like, come on now, finish it. It happens that way in music. Like, there are some things that are anticipated. There are sometimes whenever something builds, and you're like, where's the payoff? And it's all well and good. There are other times, though, like whenever we're reading movies and stuff, they actually say, or not reading, reading books, or whenever we're watching movies, they actually say it's better if you don't resolve everything. Like, the big things need to be resolved. You need some answers given. But they actually say you don't need to answer all of the little things. You don't need to answer all of the little questions. Why? Because if you answer every single question, there's nothing to talk about whenever you close the book. There's nothing to talk about whenever you leave the movie theater. But if you leave a few questions, if you leave a little bit of drama, and sometimes along the way they end up doing it in the closing credits. Like if you've ever seen the Ice Age movies, there's this little squirrel-looking thing, whatever it is, and he's always chasing after it. And inevitably, the big acorn is going to get frozen or something's going to happen to it. And the movie ends, and you're like, what happens? And so halfway through the credits, the squirrel pops up again. They do it in all kinds of movies where they might resolve some things just because it's kind of funny and quirky. But it's always good if the love interest, they might end up together, but there's always some question that remains. Well, do they have kids? Do they run off together? Do they change out? Like, what happens in their life? In adventure movies, okay, so they've discovered their power and they've overcome and now they're rising up to the challenge. But what else happens? And so leaving that little bit of an imagination, little bit of things unanswered, actually helps people to think about it over and over and over again. Now, at the end of that song, it ended up with, if you notice throughout the course of the verses of the song, it's like, when I don't feel loved, or when this happens, or when I'm not worth it, but it always ends up with, I believe, and that's where it ended up, I believe. At the end of the day, the bad stuff happens, it's going to happen in life, the fact that you aren't worthy is just a reality. The fact that you're going to have bad things happen is a reality. The fact that lots of bad things, that's a reality. But at the end of the day, none of that is the reality that matters. Do you believe? Are you trusting in Him? And so what we're looking at today in Matthew chapter 24, this is one of those passages where I think Jesus intentionally left some things vague. He left some things unresolved. And the reason why is for us to talk about, and I'll tell to you explicitly why when we get to this second section. But in the first couple of verses of Matthew 24, it says, as Jesus left and was going out of the temple, his disciples came up and called his attention to its buildings. So Jesus has just been in the temple or just been in Jerusalem. He's weeping over it. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, your house is left you is left to you desolate. And so here it's basically prophesied or told about doom coming on Jerusalem. And the disciples, as they're leaving, they're like, but Jesus, this beautiful temple, Jesus, I mean, Herod's temple was known to have these huge stones that it's still a little bit questionable how they even got it there. It was overlaid in gold. Like, it was a beautiful temple. There have been historians throughout the early centuries that said, you haven't seen a beautiful building until you've seen this temple. Like, it was beautiful and majestic. And as the disciples are leaving and they're walking through, the disciples are like, look, Jesus, look around. Like, look, it is so beautiful or it is so wonderful. What do you mean being left desolate? What do you mean, woe is Jerusalem? And Jesus replied to them in verse 2, do you see all these things? Truly, I tell you, not one stone will be left here on another that will not be thrown down. He says, do you see all these things? Now, I think this is one of those over and over again, he's going to use some seeing. And that's why I titled this, what are you watching out for? What are you watching for? What are you seeing? What are you looking at? And here they were looking at the building, and Jesus said, look, this is not the end of it. It might look beautiful, but it is destined for destruction. Your religion might look great, But if your heart is not right, then it is still failing. It's still falling apart. It means absolutely nothing. And so Jesus here is already introducing as they start getting into this. And this is as they're leaving, they continue on out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus sits, and they can probably see the temple in the background as they're sitting there watching. And the disciples came to him, and he said, "Tell us when these things will happen." Now, that is why I said, you know, at the end of the day, it matters what we're looking at. And it's not that Jesus doesn't know, but maybe he leaves a little mystery. Because what's going to happen if Jesus says, if they say, when will these things happen? And we can take that into, when will all of these things happen? I would ask you to show of hands, are you premillennial, postmillennial, amillennial? Are you pre-trib, post-trib, mid-trib, all of that stuff? There is a whole lot of discussion that goes on about when the world will end, when the end times will come, and when Jesus is coming back. And they use this chapter as a lot of references for that. And as we look at it, we can ask those questions and we can want to know those questions, but is that what we're really supposed to be looking out for, or is that why we're supposed to be looking out for it? Think about it this way. If Jesus said, the world is going to end and I'm coming back on January 2nd, 2095, or 2195, or throw any date out there. If Jesus said that, what's going to happen? On January 1st, there's going to be a lot of people trying to get right with God. Did you know that one day you are not going to have as good a balance as you have right now? One day you're not going to be as flexible as you're going to be right now. How many of you are working towards maintaining your flexibility throughout your life? Do you know that one day you are going to retire, and whenever you retire, you are no longer going to have a paycheck coming in the traditional sense, and you're going to need to put up some money? How many of you, whenever you go to Walmart, do you make that decision, you know, one day I'm going to retire, and we postpone it? It is hard for us to put off. We talk about little kids, and you've seen the little M&M challenges where they put some M&Ms on the table, and they tell the little kids, now, if you don't eat those till I get back, I'll give you 5 instead of 2. And what happens? They eating them things up. We have no view for the future. Adults are the same way. We have no view for the future. And it's not that Jesus is saying, look, I don't want everybody to get in at the last second. I don't want people, I don't want these heathens getting into heaven on the last second. It's that even believers are guilty of losing track. Even believers don't have the urgency that we need to have if we know that it's still in the future. Oh, I still got time to do that. Students always, they know all semester long that they have a project due. And when do they start working on it? Right there near the deadline. At work, we have projects that we know are assignments. And when do we start working on them? When we think, if I don't start now, I'm not going to get done. And I want to say it's human nature, like we do that. And so there's not an urgency that is there if we don't have all the questions answered. And so Jesus, in not giving us a specific date or specifically how it tells it out, this is us walking out of the movie theater having discussion. This is us having that conversation and keeping it forefront in our minds. And so as they sit there, but they want to know, when will these things happen? And it's not just talking about when will the temple be overthrown. It said, what is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? The parousia, the coming back. When are you coming back? When is your presence going to be here? Basically, when is things going to shake up and be this end game that we always keep thinking about? Now, this goes on nonstop, and talk about pre-mill, post-mill, all-mill, all of that kind of stuff. There, even this week, without even looking for it, this is not me going and doing research for the sermon. This is just taking note and getting ready for it. I saw a video where Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about a meteor called Apophis, which is going to come close to the Earth next year, in April of next year. And so on April the 13th of next year, supposedly it's going to enter into our gravitational. And they're not sure how far it's going to go. And I don't know, it might be a 10-year-old video. They might know by now. But supposedly, if it goes at a lot of angles, it's just going to go off. But there's a small window And by small window, it's like a 600-mile window that if it enters into, then it's going to hit just right, or as he says in the video, just wrong, to where then it's going to come in and it's going to collapse, and then 9 years later, I believe it is, into the world, or is going to impact the earth. So that's one that people are saying, oh, the world's going to end in 2036, or whenever it's going to be. There's also another video that I saw from somebody, I guess is a friend of mine on Facebook. I really don't even know who it is. But anyway, he was talking. He put this post on there where it said, oh, in the book of Revelations with the four horsemen, it's not that we're waiting for the four horsemen. They're already there. They're already a part of it because really this horse is talking about death, and surely death is already present. And he goes on, this is talking about war. There's already, and basically talking about how we are already living the horse. That we shouldn't be looking for a horse to come, but all of these horses are already occurring right now. And so we've got different millennial views even in that, but it's around us all the time. As our minds are consumed on what is the end of this age, we think about it all the time also. Whenever there's a funeral and we read verses in 1 Thessalonians and we think about us getting caught up with him in the air, we think, how does that actually work? Of course, a few years ago, the whole Left Behind series, big thing about they sold a whole series of books based off of a view on when is the world going to end and what's it going to look like. And we look into these things and we want to know about it, but are we looking for the right reasons? Think about this. Whenever there is a tornado coming, there's a storm system coming through, you're probably like me, you pull out your phone and you say, what does Sphinx Meganson have to say about it? And we watch, and as it comes closer, we watch even harder. And we hear the news, we hear the call out and say, be in your safe place, or put on your tornado helmet. How many of you have a tornado helmet? Okay, there's about four of you that aren't hypocrites in here. I do not have a tornado helmet either. But we like to watch, and we like to hear it, because that's exciting to hear. Oh, get your tornado helmet. Oh, it's getting good now. And why is it that we want to know when it's going to be here? Because I'm lazy, and I don't want to go to the window to look if there's nothing happening yet. I want to wait till something's happening until I can see it. And we have this almost sadistic, it's not even necessarily that we're worried. Sure, there's some worry that's in there, but some of it is the drama of it all. And we look and we say, why is it that we are so worried about the end of the age? Whenever the end of the age comes, it don't matter when it is. There ain't nothing you can do about it. But he tells us, and Jesus responded to them, he said, watch out. Notice he asked them earlier, do you see? Now he's saying, watch out, look. This is what you're to pay attention to, that no one deceives you. You see, he doesn't tell us the end of the age so that we won't get lax, so that we won't not care, so that we will still be diligent in doing what we're supposed to be doing. But he also tells us the information that we do have so that there is something to talk about. So that there is something to give us caution and to make us aware that we will watch out, that no one will deceive you. For many will come in my name saying, I'm the Messiah, and they will deceive many. Now, there are not a whole lot of people that go around saying, I'm Messiah. I'm surprised I haven't seen people walking around with t-shirts that say, I'm the Messiah, because that's, that's how people do. But remember, Messiah and Savior, that's tied together. There's a whole lot of people that claim that they're the Savior. That say that they are the Savior in the sense of, I can tell you how to have the best life. I can tell you how to have friends and influence people. I can tell you how to be the good leader. I can tell you how to make a lot of money. I can tell you how to achieve success. And there are a lot of Messiah, a lot of Saviors in that will say, you don't even have to worry about eternity because we're going to the grave and that's all there is. So live for the moment and live for the now. Now, we wouldn't call them a Savior, but they are someone that is telling you how to have your life and how to have it to the fullest and have it to the best. There's a lot of people that come deceiving. A lot of people that come to be the man or be the woman and have the answers. And you're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not alone, because these things must take place. But the end is not yet. Has there been a single year since the time of Jesus in which nobody on earth has not been at war? Some of you history buffs could correct me, but I'm pretty sure that everywhere there has been a war somewhere on earth since Jesus' time. Everywhere there's always been somebody invading somebody. There has always been somebody that is trying to defend themselves. Somebody that's raised up and skirmished. This is nothing new. These things have to take place, but the end is not yet. He's telling these believers, he's telling them, look, God reigns. God is sovereign. You're going to hear these things, but that's not the time to hit the panic button. Those things are going to happen, but these wars are not going to thwart God's plan. These wars are not going to stop anything. Don't take your eyes in the midst of all of the waiting for the tornado sirens. Don't take your eye off the tornado. Like, don't get caught up in the hype and in the fluff and in everything that's going on. Nation's going to rise up against nation. Kingdom's going to rise up against kingdom. There's going to be famines. There's going to be earthquakes in various places. And all these events are the beginning of the labor pains. These things are going to happen. Don't ignore them, but let them be a reminder to you. There's going to be people that say they have the answer. Don't think that God has suddenly shifted and it's no longer Jesus that saves, but it's your own intelligence. Don't think that computers and technology and science can now do what only God can do. Don't think that anything has changed. God is still on his throne. And so don't hit the panic button, because remember that God is on his throne and the world is going to end when God says it's time for the world to end. And if there is a war that's going on, maybe it is the time, but maybe it's not. But you just keep being faithful. Then they will hand over to you to be persecuted, and they will kill you. You will be hated by all nations because of my name. Now, who was Jesus talking to? And when was this? See, here's where we get into the whole millennial views and all of this. And later on, it's going to say that all these things will take place before this generation passes. Was he just talking to the disciples? Did this happen? Was it all completed when Jesus rose from the dead and ascended into heaven? Well, if so, none of the disciples had been killed at this point. So that seems a little hard to believe. And so not saying that that view is right or wrong, just saying that here's one of the things that we have to deal with. But why is he telling this to them if they're about to be killed? Just so that they will know? He's telling it to them. He's telling it to us also, because all of these things that were taking place, even in this generation, are signs and indicators that we can see also. I don't know how many of you have seen the movie Harry Potter. I think it's The Chamber of Secrets. I don't really know. But I believe it's that one. But in it, Harry and Ron, two of the little characters, put on this invisibility cloak. You know, like you put on this cloak and nobody can see you. But Dumbledore and Hagrid, they know that they've got it on. They know that they're in the room, even though the other people don't. And so Dumbledore says to somebody else in the room, I just want everybody to remember there will always be a safe place here at Hogwarts. And then Hagrid, the other one, says, and I just want to say that if anybody wanted to know where something was, they should follow the spiders. That's all that I want to say. And so it seems very strange to the people that don't know that the people were in the invisibility cloak, but for them, they recognize that the message was really to them. So also what Jesus is telling the disciples, he isn't just saying it that, okay, in AD 70, this is not going to be relevant to anyone ever again. He's not just saying it, John, you're going to live to be the oldest, you're going to die in your 90s, but when you die, all of a sudden this message isn't relevant to anybody anymore. All of this is relevant to us as believers. All of us is relevant because we will also see persecutions. It's possible. We think it's unlikely, but they will kill some believers today and be hated by nations because of his name. That is relevant and that is true to us even today. Many will fall away, betray one another, and hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. There it happens again. This whole. There's a lot of false prophets. A lot of people spewing ungodly things. A lot of people trying to get the true believers to fall away. They will rise up because of lawlessness will multiply, and the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And so here he's kind of bringing it back to, so look, if you are killed, then you will be, but you endure, you'll be saved. You'll be persecuted, but if you endure, you'll be saved. Nations are rising up. There's wars. Guess what? You need to endure. There will be famines. You need to endure. There will be bad things that happen. You need to endure. Or to go back to that song she sang, you need to believe. You need to continue in faith regardless of what's going on. Because know this, when the Father says it's time, it's done, it's going to be done. But in the meantime, you be faithful, you believe. And so as he continues on, this good news of the kingdom will be proclaimed in all the world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. Notice, and so here's another one of those that people say, well, the end can't come yet because all the nations haven't been spoken. And then you start getting into, well, that's why we need to send missionaries to that all the world will hear. And that's where you get into, maybe I should have looked up the number, how many numbers of unreached people groups. And as soon as, we just got to get to all these unreached people groups, then Jesus can come back again. And all of this is indicators and signs, but all of this isn't the end marching orders. He doesn't tell us when, and he tells us that the good news, the gospel of the kingdom needs to be proclaimed. That should be something that we agree with and that we endorse, and that we are proponents for and are actively engaged in. But in all of that, we know that it's not just about bringing the end. It's about being faithful because that's what he says needs to be taking place. He goes on in verse 15, when you see the abomination of desolation. Now that's a mouthful. Anybody know what the abomination of desolation is? I don't think anybody knows what the abomination of desolation is. This is a callback to the book of Daniel when, as most people believe, Antiochus Epiphanes set up an altar to Zeus in God's temple. In God's temple, he set up an altar to Zeus and he started sacrificing swine, pigs, which was an unclean animal. But at the root of it, an abomination, I can't believe that's there, of desolation. He's already told them that the house was left desolate. Is the abomination simply that God has left the temple? Well, no, because it says you will see it standing in the holy place, but who knows what it is? Let the reader understand. We just read it. Does everybody understand? Most likely it means that it's pointing back to, look, think about what happened with Daniel. Think about the disgrace of what should be wholly devoted to God was wholly undevoted to God. What should have been right worship was twisted and manipulated by some of these false prophets, some of these liars, some of these that call themselves the Messiah or the way or whatever else, and now they are setting it up for the success. Now, whether or not there is a physical object or what the physical object is and how that worship is carried out, we know that we see that all the time. We see it over and over again as we who are committed to be holy to God fill our lives with junk and filth. In the altar of our life, we're supposed to be singing praise to Him and giving thanks to Him forever. We instead grumble and complain whenever He doesn't give us exactly what we want, when we want, how we want it. On the altar of praise in our heart, where we say, God, I am wholly yours, you are Lord of my life, we want to take that fruit of the tree and say, but I want my own knowledge, I want to have it my way. Whenever we take what is holy and right and faithfully His, are we not having an abomination? We don't call it an abomination in our lives. But when we try to replace on the throne of our life anything other than Him, it is an abomination that we would have a desolate throne, or we would say, God, I need you to get off that throne so I can put something else there. And once again, there is going to be an abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, but those who see it must flee to the mountains. When did this take place and why settle in on Judea? It's because God, once again, I don't know that He's necessarily saying, if you don't live in Judea, where are you supposed to go? But read it and it says, those in Judea must flee to the mountains. A man on the housetop must not come down to get things out of his house. A man in the field must not go back to get his coat. Now, if they are living in the housetop, this is like saying, look, don't even go down and grab something on your way. I mean, that would be prudent, grab something on your way. Some commentators even think this means they should be playing some Jerusalem parkour. Like, because the houses were close enough, like they should just go jump housetop to housetop. Shortcut, get out of town as fast as you can. If you're working in the field and you got hot or you had a jacket on that day and you set it aside so you could work better, just book it out of that field. You get out of there because don't even go get your jacket that you brought. Don't put your shoes on. Don't do anything. Get out of there because that's the evil that is coming. Woe to a pregnant woman and nursing mothers in those days. Pray that your escape may not be in winter or on a Sabbath. Somewhere in the world, it's going to be winter. That it may not be on the Sabbath. That's not saying that, hey, look, even in the midst of distress, you can only go X number of miles. No, this is saying, look, pray that there will be no obstacles, that nothing will add to what's going to take place, because you're going to have all that you can deal with. For at that time, there will be great distress, the kind that hasn't take place from the beginning of the world until now and never will again. There will be a distress. There will be a tribulation. There will be, like, it's all you're going to be able to do to hold on. And I want to say that even if you aren't living in that, some of you feel today like you are doing all you can do to hold on. And in the midst of all that is going on, what is the answer for that? What is he calling us to do in those days where he is calling us to be faithful? He is calling us to believe. He's calling us to endure, as verse 13 said. He's calling us to, in the midst of everything that's going on, you do what you can, but sometimes you're just going to have to stay the course. Remain faithful. Unless those days were cut short, no one would be saved. But those days will be cut short because of the elect. So he talks about the elect. Those are the ones that are saved. Those are the ones that are in him. Those are the ones that are faithful believers and true in him. If anyone tells you, see, here is the Messiah, or over here, don't believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. So even God's real children, they're going to try to deceive them. They're going to try to get them off course. They're going to try to get them to start following after man-made religion, start trying to get them to seek after the wrong things, trying to get them off track and interrupt their faithfulness, their faithful living. He says, take note, I have told you in advance. So if they tell you, see, he's in the wilderness, don't go out. Or see, he's in the storerooms, don't believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Now, here is one of those that the lightning flashes from the east and the west. And as we get down to the other, I want you to think, as we are living where we are right now in Monroeville, Alabama, how does that look like if Jesus comes back in Jerusalem? See, immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not shed its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. People want to say, well, this is talking about a lunar eclipse, a solar eclipse. It is talking about how there's going to be a complete eclipse or maybe the smoke and the pollution and the fog. That's what's going to do us in. They look and they say, what does it mean the stars will fall from the sky? Does that mean that stars are going to blow up or burn out? That there's going to be a lot of black holes going on? Is it the stars? Think about this. Now we see stars all the time going across the sky in a dotted line as they go and marching across the sky, also known as Starlink satellites. Is it that all the satellites will fall from the sky and we're going to see it in that way? Is it that talking about the stars of the sky, is it that the angels will be falling from the sky, that they will be falling from their place? There's a lot of things that we don't know, and there's a lot of things that it's good for us to talk about, but the reason that we're talking about it isn't so that we can figure it out, isn't so that the story can be resolved the way we want it to, but Jesus has us talking about it so that we will not lose sight and not lose hope, and that we will always be ready. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the peoples of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. He will send out his angels with a loud trumpet, and they will gather his elect from the four winds. In other words, the believers, the true Christians, the ones that are saved from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Now, what will that look like? If we're on the globe and Jesus comes back right here, but our house is right here, will we go zoop? Will we go whoop? Will we go whoop? Will we go straight through the middle? I mean, it's fun to think about it, and we can laugh about the imagery of us going zoop. But all of that doesn't really matter. The question is, are you one of the elect? Are you one of the true faithful believers? Are you one of the ones that endured, that remained faithful, that was so committed to God, it was a real deal and not a fake deal? The question isn't how fast are we going to go? Are we going to go Mach 100? Or how's it going to look like? The question is, he gives us the reality that he's coming back and he will call his own. Are you his own? Because all of these other details don't matter near as much as, are you his own? At the end of the day, there's going to be persecutions. There's going to be hard times. There's going to be lots of stuff going on. What will it look like exactly? Does it really matter? Know this, it's going to be hard, but he wants you to stay faithful anyway. He's not going to say, he's not going to say, you know what, that is hard. I changed my mind. Easy roads for you. That's why the prosperity gospel has so many failings, because he acknowledges that there is a winnowing. There is a shifting, sifting. There is a determining who is the right and who is wrong, and there is a determining who will endure, who will remain. And so as you look at all of this, and as we read all of this, we look at it and we don't look at it to say, hey, I've got it all figured out. It's great during the draft if you can say, oh, I think the Cowboys need to take such and such. Then somebody else says, I think the Cowboys need to quit. But it's not that. It's fun to guess who they're going to pick. It's fun to be right, be the first person to figure it out. But even if you're the first person to figure it out, you know when you're going to figure it out? Right after it happened. Because Jesus said that no man knows the day or the hour. And so we don't need to know the day or the hour. We just need to know what we need to be doing until that day and hour. Learn this lesson. As soon as its branch comes tender and sprouts leaves, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see all of these things, recognize that he is near at the door. Now, every generation since Jesus said that has seen these signs. Every generation has seen a famine. Every generation has seen a war. Every generation has seen an earthquake. Every generation has seen Christians persecuted. Every generation has seen all of these things. So in a lot of ways, all of these signs are he brings reminders over and over again that he is coming back again. So in some ways, I'm glad that it becomes the topic of so much conversation, because people are willing to look and face the reality that Jesus is coming back for his elect, for those that believe in him, for those that have a genuine and true faith that proves true in it all. It says, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near at the door. Truly, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things take place. Proponent for the view I just said, now what about that? You see, all of these views have verses that strengthen and support them. And all of these different pre-mill, post-mill, all-mill, they all have verses that you have to deal with and say, what does it mean? Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. All of these different interpretations, all of this discussion, walking out of the theater or walking out of the church, all of the discussion is good as long as it points us towards he's coming back. What am I doing in the meantime? How am I being faithful in the meantime? See, we don't want to miss it the wrong way. We were driving the other day, we were driving down the road, and of course the babies were getting restless and everything, so we said, oh, look, a yellow car. And they were like, oh, you missed it. Well, that's okay, you missed it. Big deal. We're not really worried about that. But until I got to thinking, as the older twins graduate, and next year I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss them. Is that the same thing? Is it the same thing to, oh, I missed it when I didn't see that yellow car, or as I missed them when they don't live under the house anymore? Let's elevate it up another notch. Some of you know this reality is, oh, I missed that yellow car, the same as I miss my spouse who is going on. See, there are different ways of saying missed it and meanings for missed it. And there are different reasons why we would look into it and why we as we look at all these things that are going to take place, we don't want to miss it in the sense that we weren't ready. But we also don't want to miss him in the right now. He said, heaven and earth will never pass away, but my words will never pass away. Do you cling to his word? Do you cling to his truth? Do you cling to that gospel message? Are you looking towards the Bible because you think it might help you solve the riddle so that you can win the Bible Jeopardy? Are you looking and reading the Bible so that you will know, Russia's the bear, right? And Iran, they're like, oh, what animal was that? And all of these signs of the times of the apocalypse and all of that, are we looking at it so that we can have the answers? Or are we looking at it because his word is true and he said, I am coming back and I am coming for my own? Are you his own? And if you are his own, how are you living in the meantime? When persecution arises, don't think they're killing anybody in the United States, at least not yet. But here's the even bigger thing. Whenever somebody says, oh man, church, do you keep your mouth shut? Whenever somebody says, oh, that Jesus thing, you super hypocritical, you goody two-shoes, you whatever, do you slide back a little bit in your faith? Or are you bold? His word will never pass away. There is nothing that he says and nothing that he promises that will not come to being. He will hold you secure, or he will condemn you to hell. It all depends on if you have Christ in your life. See, we are all sinners. We are all unworthy. That song that she sang earlier, once again, when I'm not worthy, yeah, you're not worthy. You aren't worthy of his love and your grace. You aren't worthy of him dying on the cross for your sins. I'm not worthy of his love and the grace. All the sermons that I've preached don't mean anything as far as getting me into heaven. All of the money that we give means nothing as far as getting us into heaven. All of the things that we've done mean nothing. What matters is if we have faith in him, for it's his righteousness alone that saves us. But he says that those that come to him and believe, that profess him as Lord, will be saved. And that doesn't change. So this morning I ask you, when the trumpet of the Lord shall sound and time shall be no more, will you be caught up into the air, or will you be left here? Whenever you do die, and one day you will die, and you step into eternity, will it be with him, or will it be in hell? I'm not asking you which one would you prefer, just pick one out of the hat. I'm asking you which one is your reality, because the reality is based off your faith in Jesus Christ. That's why he tells us. That's why he warns us about hell. That's why he tells us about the joy of heaven. It's so that we can do something about it. And so that there can be a response to what's going on. That's why he tells us he's coming back, so that we can live according to him coming back. That's why he tells us to love one another, so that we can live in response to that. And that's why he tells us all of what he tells us in his word, so that we wouldn't just hear it, so that we wouldn't just get a bunch of information and a bunch of facts, but so that it could change the way we live our lives. So I'm asking you this morning, how have you responded to his offer of salvation? How are you living in response to the truth that we will stand before him one day and give an account for what we did with his son and how we live our lives? During this time of invitation, I'm here if anyone wants to know more about salvation. The altar is open if you want to pray. You can go talk to somebody else, but I do hope that we will not take what he said and say, oh, that's a cool story, but that we will talk about it, that we will try and help each other to fill in the blanks and say, I don't understand how this is, or what do you think about this? And so that as iron sharpens iron, we can encourage one another and sharpen one another and build one another, so that we would be Christians that don't just hear a sermon or sing a song and then walk out of the church and forget about it until next time, but that we would see even the parts that we don't understand or don't know, that we would use that to stir in our hearts a conversation and stir in our lives a change. Let's pray.